Hello, everyone. This is AC2GS, and this is the Limart Technical Net. Sorry that I'm a little bit late. Things have to be done. So, we're hopefully ready to go. As always, we're here to kind of inform, educate each other. So I hope you're all here ready to do that. This is a 4th of July weekend we have here. So with that in mind, let me drop for a second and I'll come back with the usual link. Okay, if you're interested in contacting me via email, that would be either for mailbag questions or for puzzle questions, or if you have a topic that you would like to discuss on the air, or if you'd like me to tap Paul on the shoulders and ask him something space or NASA related. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Of course, you can also contact Paul at spacenetreport@gmail.com. Drop for a sec. Okay, I keep a list of interesting YouTubes and articles on a link page. That link page is, you can get to it by typing in roy.ac2gs.com. That will bring up the link page, and it's available 24/7. We have a chat room. chat.ac2gs.com is the way to get to the chat room. I have to make sure that it's open. As I mentioned, usually we have an audio stream. You just type in technet.ac2gs.com, and it provides an audio stream of this technical net, and we keep it live for the rest of the week, so you can listen to Glen Oaks Repeater. And as always, I like to remind people, MyKC2NJI has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the technical net going as far back as September of 2006. So those are the links. Let me drop for a second, and I'll be right back with what we have planned for tonight.
And WS2N, good evening, Roy. And the chat room is not open yet.
Yeah, I know. I just kind of got to it right now, so it should be open rather quickly.
No problem. Very good. Very good. I'll be listening.
Okay, so that's open, thankfully. We have a regular evening planned. We will ask people if they have questions or comments or topics for discussion, hopefully amateur radio related at first, but as time goes on, we'll open things up for the rest of the science and technology topics, and we'll try our best to address them. That should take us to about 10:15, in which we'll then have Paul, WS2N, with the science, with the Space Net Report, which will take us to about 11 o'clock, and I will return and wish you well and call it a week. That's the plan if everything stays operational. So with that in mind, let me drop and ask if anyone has any technical questions, topics, comments for tonight.
W2BC.
Rich recognized. Anyone else?
KD2VHD.
Jim recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight? Okay, well, we'll start with Rich and then Jim, and as time goes on, hopefully there will be more people with more topics and comments. Rich, what's your question or your comment for tonight?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody else who's listening. You know that concept of making the radio feel good by using an internal tuner? I'm just wondering, what's the difference between just making the radio feel good or actually improving your output? Go ahead.
AC2GS. Okay. So basically what you're kind of getting into is the old conversation that's not uncommon on 75 meters. Are antenna tuners of any use, really, or are they really only useful to either fool yourself that you're accomplishing something or fool the transmitter at the very least. It's a bit of both, unfortunately. Is it best to have a fully resonant antenna without an antenna tuner? Yes, it is. But if you do not have a perfectly resonant antenna, then an antenna tuner serves a lot of different purposes. It will introduce a degree of a loss in the component itself. It adds some loss in the reflection off of a transmission line. If your transmission line has loss, and all transmission lines to one degree or another have a loss, and there are other factors that creep up as well. So the problem is that it's a reasonable solution. It's not perfect, but it's a lot better than nothing. If you don't have, let me drop for a second. If you do not have a proper match and you try to transmit through your transmitter, it will produce enough of a power reflection that you'll either burn out your transmitter, or if there's a safety feature, your transmitter will go to a much lower setting. If you match the impedance, you won't have the reflection, and you'll be able to transmit relatively full power into your radiating antenna. And you have to deal with the reflections back and forth of having to go through antenna tuners and the attenuation of the circuitry in a antenna tuner. So it's a complicated subject, but ultimately it's far better to have the antenna tuner than not to.
Okay, well, here's my dilemma. The way my radio works is the lower the SWR, the more power it lets me put into the antenna. So let's say with my mag loop, I'm looking at a 2.5 to 1 without the antenna tuner and a 1 to 1 with the antenna tuner. Isn't that allowing me to put more power into the antenna rather than just fool the transmitter?
To a degree, yes, but also there's prices to be paid. There's a big difference between having an impedance matching circuit at the antenna feed line and having it at the other end of the transmission line. So it's not as efficient an energy transfer as you would want.
Okay, but what would be the difference if, let's say, I transmitted at a 2-to-1 SWR, or I use the antenna tuner in the rig and transmit it at a 1-to-1 SWR? What would be the difference on the receiving end? Because that's all we really care about, right? What's the other guy hearing?
Well, the problem is it's a complicated question. It might seem simple, but it is complicated. And one of the important aspects is where is your antenna where is your impedance modifying circuit in your transmission line, and what is the attenuation loss of the transmission line? That's why usually when people use non-resonant antennas like doublets, they use an open wire transmission line because the attenuation is very low. So you can tune a mistuned doublet at the shack through open line transmission wire with very little loss. If you replace that with, say, LMR 400, the loss goes up. If you switch out something like RG 58, it goes very high up. And it has to do with the transmission line, the distance of the transmission line, and the attenuation loss of the transmission line. As your mismatch gets higher and higher, the number of reflections going back and forth on your transmission line increase and the attenuation increases.
In my transceiver, which is an old Kenwood 440, is self-limiting. In other words, it'll only allow me to put 50 watts out at, let's say, 2-to-1. But at 1-to-1, it allows me to put 100 watts out. I can't control that. It's self-limiting, so it doesn't burn up its own finals. But are you saying if I use the internal antenna tuner, and by the way, I would say 99% of all modern radios come with an internal antenna tuner. If I use the antenna tuner, it's not really allowing me to put more power into the antenna. It can't even though now it's showing itself a 1-to-1, it's not allowing me to put 100 watts in as if I had a 1-to-1 antenna without the antenna tuner.
I don't know. I think I got lost in that description, although I mentioned earlier that a lot of modern transmitters have safety features that if they sense enough reflected power, they will drop the output power down. So, yeah, if you go through a antenna tuner that changes your 2-to-1 to 1-to-1, you'll have less reflection that gets to the transmitter itself. It gets sensed that causes the circuit to either short itself out and kill itself or simply clip its output power as a safety feature. But the problem is that it doesn't take all of that power and just dump it to your antenna. Some of it is going to get lost in the attenuation, loss of the reflection back and forth on your transmission line, and some of it is going to be lost as insertion loss of your antenna tuner. And it's true that modern radios don't have a built-in, well, I mean, some of them have antenna tuning circuits built into them and some don't. Part of that is the earlier ones that were vacuum tube related, they had higher impedances to their transmitters, so their output of their transmitters always had a pi network that you would tune it to the output impedance. So in the olden days when everything was vacuum tube, you inevitably had something called a pi network on your transmitter that operated the same way that our present-day antenna tuners do.
Okay, let me try to ask it again. Real-life example, if I'm showing a 2-to-1 and I go to transmit without trying to correct that, my radio will only allow me to put 50 watts out. Now, if I use the internal antenna tuner and bring that 2-to-1 now down to 1-to-1, what is my transmitter doing? It's not allowing me to put 100 watts out, is it?
Yeah, it should. I mean, what you do with what your antenna circuit system does with it is another story. But as far as the transmitter is concerned, if you take a look at your power supply output and how much power you're supplying your transmitter, it should be transmitting approximately the same output as if you had a perfect 1-to-1 SWR transmission line antenna system.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I, too, have the Kenwood 440, and actually you could either use the internal antenna tuner or you could click it out. Now, you can really test that really good by going over to the selecting switch, that normally picks, you could either go with the ALC, the power, or the SWR. And if you put it on power, you're going to see a big difference. Like Rich says, it's going to cut back if it sees a high SWR. If you're not using the antenna tuner, then you push that button in, and the number goes way down. I'll see maybe 1.5, on the SWR. Click it over to power, and you'll see you're going out you're full. Well, in my case, a full 100 watts. So you can see the difference. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, that's the safety feature, because otherwise a lot of reflected power would get back into the transmitter, which is not built to deal with, and you would burn out your transmitter. So it's a safety feature. Now, you would output the 100 watts from the final stage in your transmitter, but if you had a 2-to-1 that was corrected with the antenna tuner, you would not get the total amount of power to the antenna itself. A percentage of that energy would be lost between the transmission line and the antenna tuning circuit.
But is the transmitter actually putting out 100 watts now that it's using its internal antenna tuner, or is it, because the antenna isn't being fixed at all, it's still a 2-to-1 antenna, so I'm just wondering why a transceiver would allow 100 watts to go into that antenna when it wouldn't if you don't use the antenna internal tuner.
Okay, we have some problem with terms, I have a feeling. There's kind of a bunch of different things. There's the transmitter, there's the antenna system. The antenna system is pretty much everything that goes past the transmitter. So the coax from the transmitter to the antenna tuner, and the antenna tuner, and the coax from the antenna tuner to the antenna. And then plus or minus the antenna itself is the antenna system. If you have a 2-to-1 bisois on your transmitter, the safety circuits will limit the power. If you have some mechanism to block the reflection back, like an antenna tuner, it will not sense the reflections back, and it will allow 100% of the power to go out into your antenna tuner. Your antenna tuner will then adjust the impedance so that it won't reflect back to your antenna transmitter, but it will reflect back and forth on the transmission line, which can lead to increased attenuation loss. The higher the SWR, the more reflections back and forth, the more the attenuation per trip back and forth will add up. So you'll get the total power out of your transmitter, but the problem is, instead of getting the total power applied to your antenna itself, a significant portion of the energy might be dissipated in both the antenna tuner and, to a greater extent, the transmission line reflecting back and forth.
So it seems like there's, in actuality, no real gain for kicking in the antenna tuner, because, again, the antenna system isn't being changed at all by anything. That's still a 2-to-1 antenna system. So if the antenna tuner limits the recognition of the reflected power back into the transceiver and allows it to put 100 watts into the antenna, you still may have no real change, right? Whether you use the antenna tuner or you didn't.
KC2GS. Again, it sort of depends upon the amount of loss introduced by the antenna tuner. Most transmission lines are not very high attenuation loss. You know, again, I'm taking worst-case scenarios. If you were using RG58, you know, 150 feet of RG58, that would be a really significant amount of energy loss. If you swapped it out for an open wire, then the energy loss would be negligible. Or if you moved your antenna tuner from your shack to the feed point of your antenna, then your attenuation would be very minimal. So although ultimately it's more efficient to transmit to a completely resonant and tuned antenna, you can get a portion of the extra power to the antenna itself with some degree of loss in the, on the way. So again, depending upon the distance of your transmission line, the efficiency of transfer, the attenuation loss of the transmission line, the efficiency of the antenna tuner, you could have anything from zero loss to 100% loss if you really have a poorly designed system.
Comment?
Yes, please, comment. Yes, someone wanted to comment?
You're right. KC2, SHO, can I try?
Sure. Sure, John, please do.
I think when it comes to this discussion, it's useful to compare what would happen in an optimal scenario versus the antenna tuner. So when he launches his signal into the transmission line, it goes down the transmission line, hits the antenna, and if the antenna is a perfect impedance match, that signal will bounce back and forth on that antenna in phase a whole bunch of times, right? You could say maybe 30 times that signal's bouncing back and forth on that antenna. It's just a number, it's not important for the discussion. That is a standing wave structure, and that is why it is resonant, because it is bouncing back and forth in phase. Change that antenna at all, longer or shorter, you will change whether that in phase, or whether that bouncing is in phase, or a leading phase, or a lagging phase. What the tuner is doing, sending that signal back down the line, giving it another chance to radiate in phase with the previous wave, if that makes sense. Does that make sense? Do you agree with that? Paraphrasing things I've been hearing for years. Go ahead.
Yeah, but the problem is that as a standing wave on a radiating antenna, the losses in that antenna are non-existent. The transmission line tends to have some non-negligible attenuation with every sweep back and forth that it makes.
Absolutely, and that's where I was going to go next. I'm trying to help. It seems like the question he's asking isn't getting addressed. I hope I'm helping with that. Yes, so if the antenna tuner is near the radio, then the entire loss of the transmission line must be taken into account for every re-radiation of this signal. Second chance to go down the line and do it again. It'll do this a whole bunch of times until the signal gets so small and negligible. So if you move the antenna tuner down the line, you will decrease that loss as you put it closer to the antenna. This is why some people prefer an antenna tuner that is directly mounted at the antenna, just to reduce that loss. You aren't tricking anything. You are giving that antenna, that transmission line, that tuner is all the radiating structure now, because you are providing the conjugate match. It is now all a system. You're not tricking or fooling anything. You only need to account for the loss. So yes, that energy, other than the loss in the coax, gets a chance to be re-radiated. His radio has a chance to put as much of that energy back into the antenna as possible. It's not just tricking the transmitter. It is getting a second chance. I hope that clarifies it, and I could go on if this needs.
Okay, thank you, John. I agree with you. Maybe I'm not using the right words for better understanding. The amount of ultimately, the people will say it's tricking the transmitter in that the transmitter is not perceiving the reflection as far back as onto its sensing circuits, because if the transmitter's safety circuits felt that reflection coming back and forth, it would shut itself down as a safety feature. Now, I mean, having a circuit be fooled, I'm not quite sure what that means, but people use that on 75 meters all the time. But ultimately, it tends to evolve into a discussion of the fact that there is a non-zero energy loss using an antenna tuner and a transmission line connecting the antenna tuner to the antenna, and that determines the efficiency of the energy transfer. It's in almost every case better than not using one, so most people use one, but it's not perfect. There are people out there that are misunderstanding the concept, and they think that a very nice antenna tuner will get 100% of the power that comes out of the transmitter into the antenna. Again, if it was a perfectly lossless system where you had the antenna tuner at the very feed point, you come very close to that. There is insertion loss in the antenna tuner circuits themselves. But the idea is that I can't tell someone you're losing 10% of your power, because again, it depends upon the components that you're using, the length of the components, and the SWR that you're correcting for.
I'm only concerned with radiated power, the power that goes out into space. So, if the transceiver would put 50 watts out, or show that it's putting 50 watts out with a 2-to-1 match, and 100 watts out with a 1-to-1 match using the antenna tuner, what's the difference in the radiated power into space?
In any case, it is usually always much better than no tuner at all. Although if a transmitter has a high enough on its output, some of them can look like a complete open. And that energy will get reflected back towards the transmission line, the antenna again. Apparently some computer systems can be like that. And I would also say, if you get a chance, was his name Rich? I've heard him in here many times over the years. If you get the chance, watching the Ham Radio Now episode about standing wave ratio is just an amazing video. If no one's ever seen that, it is just a fantastic explanation of standing waves and reflections and what's going on in the transmission line. A real ham radio level, but also very well explained and accurate explanation of how transmission line works and what happens with reflections and matches and in that line. So ham radio now, it's called Standing Up Standing Waves. Good YouTube video.
Okay, very good, John. Unfortunately, John, Rich has kind of doubled you the first third of what you were saying, so we couldn't really hear it. I heard the last two-thirds of what you were saying. And again, I agree with what you say. Rich's comment was about the measured power versus the affected power, I think. So that goes into a further nuanced conversation of what a watt meter will tell you. Watt meter does not necessarily tell you the power that's at your antenna. It tells you the power that's going through your transmission line into your through your transmission line up to the feed point into the antenna. So it sort of gives you a maximum forward. You know, if you measure the reverse, you'll see the reflected power back, and you can calculate the SWR by forward versus reverse power reflected. So just because you read, say, 100 watts in your watt meter going to your antenna, if it's going through, say, 150 or 200 feet of RG58, it's guaranteed that if you put another watt meter at the antenna feed point, it's going to have significantly less than 100 watts show up there. So you have to understand what the watt meter is telling you. It's telling you the amount of forward power at the point of the watt meter.
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, I think what may be confusing a bit is that the power that the antenna absorbs and radiates is the forward power minus the reflective power. So So if you pump 100 watts down the line, no tuner or anything, and you have an SWR, the power that gets to the antenna and gets radiated is the forward power, that 100 watts, minus the reflected power, whatever is caused by that reflection coefficient, and that's what the antenna absorbs. Now, when you put an antenna tuner in there, now what happens, before the antenna tuner, on the transmitter side, the transmitter sees a one-to-one SWR. So there is the full forward power and no reflected power. On the other side of the tuner, you're going to see a forward power greater than what the transmitter is putting out, because that greater forward power minus what's still going to be reflected by the antenna is going to amount to, if you neglect losses, what the transmitter is putting out. So if you neglect losses and the transmitter is putting out 100 watts and you have a tuner, okay, then the full 100 watts pretty much is getting to the antenna. But if you put a power meter on the antenna side of the tuner, you're going to see a greater forward power than what the transmitter is putting out.
So, okay, John, I agree with you as well. I think the factor, though, that has to be added, although it might complicate the situation a wee bit, is that every reflection back and forth, because most of our coax cables are lossy, is an added attenuation loss. So if you were operating a transmission line that was a perfectly lossless one, I would totally agree with you. But because we do, every time the power goes forward and reverse and forward and reverse, that energy is dissipated as heat because of the attenuation loss of any given transmission line.
Well, let's say we did this at 160 meters, where the line loss is not going to be that great, and the components are not going to be that lossy. I mean, let's say you had 50 feet of LMR 400 on 160 meters. I don't think you'd have much more loss than maybe 2 dB or so.
Okay, but yeah, the whole point is, I mean, you're optimizing the attenuation loss in the transmission line by suggesting a low frequency where attenuation loss is much less. As you increase the frequency of the transmission, the attenuation loss dB per 100 feet goes higher and higher. So, yeah, it's special cases of a very low frequency and relatively short distances, the attenuation loss is nominal. But as time goes on, if you increase the frequency, if you increase the distance, you'll get a greater and greater and greater loss. You know, 2 decibels doesn't sound like a lot, but it's almost halving your power. So, you know, there is attenuation loss. There is a price to be paid for a non-resonant antenna and an antenna tuner. It's a decent price to be paid, and so that's why we all pay it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. But the thing to remember, I think what bothers a lot of people is that after the tuner, you can see greater forward powers than what your transmitter is actually putting out, because you're still going to have a reflected power coming from the antenna. And it's the difference, the forward minus the reflected, is what the antenna takes in and radiates. But neglecting is lost.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. The point is that people rely a little bit too much on their watt meters. Their watt meters are telling them the forward power at the point that the watt meter is connected. It's not particularly telling them the total power that's being put into the antenna itself. That's something you're making a few assumptions about.
That's who APG with a comment.
Yes, please.
Am I recognized, APG?
Yes, please.
Hi, yes, please. Very good. I've been listening with half an ear, and I think I have a very easy solution for Rich to make some measurements that he can get all his questions answered. Basically, what he needs to do is just get a relative field strength meter, which is available on eBay, or you can make one, or you know, find one at a ham fest or something like that, and that will give him the ability to measure his relative field strength of the signal that's coming out of his station. And this way he can make whatever adjustments on his transmatch, he can change his coax, he can do any sort of modifications inside the shack or to the system, and he can take measurements and see which one gives him the best signal output. That connect?
Okay, yeah, he could do that. That, though, begs the question of directionality. Different locations are going to give him different relative readings, but he can certainly infer from the same area rough approximations of how his adjustments are going to change the final output and the amount of RF energy in that area that he's testing. Don't know if he has one. Don't think he has one. It's doable. I don't know of almost anyone that actually does that, though. They just kind of understand the limitations of the equipment that they're using. They know what transmission lines they're using, where their antenna tuners are located, either proximal or distal to the antenna feed point, and suffer the consequences. There's not a lot that you can really adjust. You're not going to really adjust the distance of your transmission line. You might change to a lower loss transmission line. But it's not like people have switchable transmission lines of different attenuation losses. So it's more of a predictive process for most hams, I think, than a measured one.
Roy, let me see if I have it. When I doubled with John, what I was saying was, we're only concerned with the amount of energy that's being radiated from the antenna, right? That's the goal. What's happening in between, it matters, of course, it matters greatly, but what we're really concerned with getting the most power out into space. This is complicated by, and everybody who listens to the TechNet knows that I built myself a magnetic loop, and they say, which I still don't understand, don't use a toner with a magnetic loop. If anybody knows why that is, please hit your push to talk button and let me know. But what I did try was, I was getting a 2-to-1 on 40, I think it was, on the Kenwood 440. I was getting on 40 meters a 2-to-1 reading. Against advice, don't use an antenna tuner with a magnetic loop. I threw it into the circuit, and the radio showed a 1-to-1 match now with the antenna tuner, the internal antenna tuner, but it did not. It did not show, my power meter did not show an increase beyond what the radio was putting out when I didn't have the antenna tuner in. So, in other words, it was the same power output on an external meter when I was transmitting with a 2-to-1 and then with the antenna tuner and a 1-to-1. It showed the same power output. That's what I don't understand.
AC2GX, let me just check that I have the repeater. Fine. I mentioned a few times, the problem with introducing any other impedance matching devices onto a magnetic loop is because the efficiency of a magnetic loop and the radiation resistance is so terribly low that any insertion loss of just an ohm or two will knock out 95% of your power. So you will effectively have a dummy load. Dummy loads have a perfect 1-to-1 SWR, but a proper one, fully shielded, has absolutely no RF field surrounding it. So it is an infinitely inefficient, perfectly matched
load for a transmitter. And you sort of approach the same way theoretically with magnetic loops. Again, because your a center-fed dipole has approximately a radiation resistance of about 50, 55 ohms, 1 or 2 ohms of insertion loss from an antenna tuner is negligible. You'll get 1 or 2% loss of power. If you have something that has a radiation resistance of a tenth of an ohm or a hundredth of an ohm, and you introduce an additional component that gives you 1 ohm of resistance, then your efficiency goes out the window. It wasn't great to begin with, but that introduces far less efficiency. So what you've produced by introducing the antenna tuner is a glorified dummy load. Now, why your transmitter still is running the safety feature of rolling back your output transmitter power is beyond me. It's, theoretically, if it truly is one-to-one, it shouldn't read reflective power. It should give you a total output power that it's capable of.
PhD coming.
Yes, Jim.
I have a thought. There's two separate questions trying to be answered at the moment. What will happen when Rich changes between the higher power and a tuning tuner and lower power and not a tuner? And then the second question is why? And I suggest that he actually experiments with contacts and figures out what's happening and then comes back to this form for the why. Because he can much more readily find out the what with a couple of experiments talking to a contact. Does that make any sense?
Well, Jim, it will give you anecdotal evidence for something. It's still necessary to kind of understand what's going on. Again, the place that I have the problem is if I'm reading the situation correctly. Rich's transmitter has a safety feature that is able to sense reflected power and cut the driver down as a safety feature. He says that he's able to get a one-to-one SWR by using the radio's internal antenna tuner. If that's the case, theoretically, I can't understand why he's getting enough reflected power to have his transmitter drop to a safety power output. So that's where I have a little problem understanding the situation.
I would love to hear the real-world results of a contact using both methods that he proposed, because it's an interesting question that seems theoretically hard to chase down.
Yeah, I would agree with you in that, Jim. Let me ask Rich. The output power of your transmitter when set to max is 100 watts, I believe. What is the output when you have your magnetic loop hooked in with your antenna tuner? Is it 50 watts or is it less than 50 watts output on your transmitter?
Depends on the band. On 20 meters, it puts out just about full power, but on 40, it's only putting out half power without the antenna tuner and half power with the antenna tuner.
Okay, I mean, that doesn't strike me as the safety transmitter feature. Most safety transmitters, if it sees a significant amount of reflected power, it doesn't just go down to 50%. It usually goes down to something like 5 or 10%. Paul, if you know what kind of power output is that your transmitter capable of if it sees reflected power and the safety feature kicks in?
Well, it's 100.
Right.
But once that safety feature kicks in, it's like, well, Rich is saying 50. It's probably closer to 20, you know. It kind of really drops off. So, you know, there's a big difference. Sometimes I'll be on a band and I'll forget that, you know, I didn't hit the antenna tuner and try to transmit, and the guy is not going to hear me. I don't care if I'm on CW or phone. And then the second I bring the antenna tuner you know, put that, you know, push that button, and the next thing I know, there's no problem. The guy will copy me. You know, I'll be going back up to, you know, well, it doesn't say 100, it probably says around 90 on my meter when I click it over to power. But, yeah, it is a significant difference, 50% difference. It doesn't go from, like, 100 down to 50. It goes from 100 down to, like, probably 20.
Okay, that sort of sounds the way that I've had all these safety features described to me. It's not going to drop it down to 50. It's not one of those just kind of auto-correcting for, for optimal use. It's more like it's screaming bloody murder and it's cutting the power down significantly. So I'm not sure if it's the safety feature that's being triggered in your transmitter, Rich. I think there's something else going on for that configuration. As Jim mentioned, if you're able to get 50% power output, it would be curious to see, even with the 50% power output, are you making contacts with people that is in line with 50% power output, or are you making contacts that are consistent with far, far, far less than 50%? That would kind of give us all a better idea of the efficiency of the magnetic loop under those circumstances. And again, my gut feeling would be that you might be able to get away on the receiver end because receivers are much more forgiving. They need just microvolts to deal with. But if you have attenuation losses and inefficiencies of a magnetic loop due to the very low radiation resistance, where, you know, 99% of your signal that gets to the antenna is just going to be used up as thermal heat, then you'll have a great decrease in the range of your transmission.
That's a good question, Roy. That's a great question. In fact, last night I was trying to call a guy in Canada who was coming in like 10 over into my receiver, and he couldn't hear me at all. So, don't know what's going on. I've been playing around today with the way the capacitor is being connected to the loop. I tried a couple of different ways, and one does lower the SWR a little bit, but not enough to make any real kind of change. I just don't know what's happening on 40. It could be that even though the capacitor is allowing me to tune on 40, it's still, for some reason, very inefficient on 40. Not so on 20. But I notice on 17, it's also pretty inefficient. So, you know, I have what I'll do, and I'll report back next week, I have a shortened NFED half-wave wire. I'm going to see, you know, how different the transmitter acts with that antenna on 40 compared to... Now, I know I need my external antenna tuner to go on 40 with that NFED half-wave, but I think I'm getting more power out on 40 by a lot than I am getting out of the magnetic loop.
Yeah, the NFED is a much more efficient antenna. It has a higher radiation resistance. Insertion losses, attenuation losses, have less of an effect on it than a magnetic loop. Theoretically, the way magnetic loops tend to work is the lower the capacitance, the tuning capacitance, tends to mean the higher the frequency, tends to mean the higher the radiation resistance and the greater the efficiency of the magnetic loop. So all things being equal, a magnetic loop will tend to be more efficient to output power at its highest frequency that it's resonant for. As you try to get it to resonate at a lower frequency, you have to introduce more and more capacitance in the variable capacitor, and that will decrease the radiation resistance and decrease the general efficiency of the antenna operating on that frequency. And again, if you then introduce another impedance transforming circuit like an antenna tuner, the additional insertion loss is going to have a significant effect on the inefficiency of that magnetic loop. And so again, you might be able to hear signals, but the output power will be so minimal that you can't read it on your watt meter, because it's not the amount of power going to your magnetic loop. It's the final amount of RF emitted from whatever energy you're trying to push through the magnetic loop. That's where APG's comment about a field strength meter might be of interest to you.
Yeah, you know, I hooked up the Digimotor, for anybody who was listening last week, to my non-repeatable tuning on each band. It was because the stepper motor was underpowered, because this variable capacitor is a big thing. It weighs like 2 pounds, and it's, you know, it was too hard to turn accurately with the 17 NEMA motor. But with a 23 NEMA motor, it's able to repeat the resonant points on each band. But I'm not liking what I see SWR-wise. Anyway, I'm going to make these comparisons with the NFED half-wave and see how my transceiver, with and without the tuner, reacts to that antenna rather than the mag loop. And I got to say, on 40, the variable capacitor is fully meshed. There's no play. It can't go above 40 at all. It just makes it to 40, and the capacitor is fully meshed. Each turn, either right or left of the capacitor, and the SWR will shift below 40 meters, the low point of the SWR. So it's right at the top of the capacitor. That may have something to do with the efficiency also. But I'll come back next week after I do some experiments. I want to also connect the capacitor in a different way to the loop, using the braid from coax, than I have it now with copper foil tape. So thank everybody, thank you, Roy, for your input, and I'll be back hopefully with a loop that's working on 40 meters. Over to you, Roy.
K2SCP. Yes, very good, Rich. I wish you luck as always. Yeah, one of the most important aspects of building a magnetic loop is to get the insertion loss of the contacts as low as humanly possible. Again, because you're dealing with an antenna system that has such a terribly infinitesimal radiation resistance. Every hundredth of an ohm of resistance you can eliminate by making the contacts between the components more conductive, the better it is. There are people who weld and solder all these joints together to decrease the amount of insertion loss. So that's a very important aspect of design of magnetic loops. So I wish you luck, and I look forward to future reports of how things are going. Yeah, if you're totally enmeshing your variable capacitor, then that's pretty much the most inefficient configuration of your magnetic loop when you get to 40 ohms. Although it very likely could be tunable. You could have an impedance on your transmitter of 50 ohms. So have a one-to-one. The amount of energy transfer into RF is not a lot, which is why people don't simply get bigger and bigger and bigger capacitors and try and operate on 160 meters using a standard 3-foot diameter magnetic loop. Your efficiency at that frequency would probably be something like a thousandth of a percent.
There was another commenter in there.
Anyone have any other comments to make, please do so.
K2SCP.
Yes, Chris.
Maybe you guys know this already. I'm just wondering, I'd like to ask Rich how you're reading the power. So are you reading it on a radio, a power meter? And if it is a separate power meter, where do you have it inserted?
To complicate things, I'm reading the power two ways. The meter on the 440 itself, but I also have an MFK antenna tuner, Deluxe Versa tuner. It's a 969, I think, that also has a meter in it, and that's whether the antenna tuner is tuning or it's being bypassed. The meter's still working it, and I'm mostly relying on both of them, but the far lower reading in power is coming from the MFJ tuner, and I don't think that's just a mismatch in the calibration of the two meters. I think the MFJ tuner is reading really what's coming out of the radio, and I think the 440 meter is reading it before it comes out of the radio. Go ahead.
Yeah, K2SDP, I guess you would be right, but I would suggest getting another meter, a separate meter, and putting it between them and also after the tuner, and to see the results of that as well.
I was thinking of doing that myself, but for some reason, it just feels like, in relative terms, that the MFJ meter is giving me a truer picture than the 440 meter.
I assume Chris doesn't have any other comments. I have loads of comments. You have a transmitter, you have your SWR meter, and you then have your magnetic loop. Where else could you put a watt meter? You have the built-in one to the transmitter. You have one in the middle of a transmission line connecting to your magnetic loop. There aren't any other pieces of equipment that I'm aware of, unless you happen to have another antenna tuner hooked in somewhere into that line. It's always possible that one of your watt meters is relatively out of calibration, and so if you have a watt meter connected right out of your transmitter and your transmitter's watt meter is reading significantly different power, it's unlikely to me that there's going to be attenuation between that distance of transmission line unless the transmission line is shot. Otherwise, it shouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's why I thought he should put one between the radio and the tuner to make sure we know what we're looking at. Maybe the meters are on K2SDP.
Yeah, but as far as I'm aware, the tuner that he's using is internal to the radio, so it's impossible to kind of plug it between the two. You're getting the output of the transmitter past the point of the antenna tuner that's built into the radio.
Roy, to complicate the situation,
I thought you said you had an MFJ tuner as well.
I use the antenna tuner, the external antenna tuner, the MFJ antenna tuner, mostly for when I'm using my NFED half-wave, because the internal antenna tuner won't match it, only the external antenna tuner. So I'm comparing both, but I know it's getting more and more and more complicated. But I, like I said, I believe the power output, because I could see it on my VNA, I could see that I'm only getting, like a 2-to-1 into the MAC loop from the VNA. And therefore, I believe that the 40 or 50 watts that the MFJ meter is showing me is more accurate. Because that does go up on 20 meters when the SWR does go down on the VNA. So I'm using all three together, the VNA, the meter in the radio, and then the meter external to the radio. I'm comparing all three, and they do work in conjunction, except the MFJ meter is showing me much less power output than the radio is showing me.
Okay, let me first ask this. Is the MFJ in bypass mode, or are you telling me that you have two antenna tuners in line with a magnetic loop?
No. If I'm using the internal antenna tuner, the MFJ's bypass, and vice versa. But like on 20 meters, I don't need either antenna tuner in. I just need to get it resonant with the capacitor.